Wait a minute, this sounds like rock and or roll.
Hey, you're listening to Rock and or Roll. I'm BJ, and since I'm sure some people out there are sick of hearing about Motley Crue, we're going to take a break from Motley Crue for this bonus episode this week. For this episode, friend of the show Craig Cohen conducted an interview with former bass player from the Ramones, CJ Ramone. CJ has an album coming out called The Holy Spell, comes out next week. The Crue will be back next week when Sonny Pooney and Stephen Michael join me to discuss the self-titled 1994 album. But until then, enjoy this interview that Craig Cohen did with CJ Ramone. I am here with CJ Ramone, and we're here to talk about his new solo album, which comes out on May 10th, The Holy Spell. CJ, welcome and thank you.
All right. Good to be here.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about the new album? Because I was following you on social media while you were recording it, and it seems like you invested a lot of time into this album.
Yeah, this is the first album I've done without Steve Soto, my buddy Steve, that from the Adolescents. Steve passed away last year, and this was the first one I was doing without him. And he had a lot to do with everything that I've done post Ramones, pretty much, as far as the CJ Ramone stuff goes. And it was kind of unnerving to consider going into the studio without him. But I went to the studio that I did my last record with Steve in. I went back into that studio with my buddy Paul Miner at Buzzbomb Studios in Orange. And it made the whole process a lot easier because from the get-go, we were like, Steve ain't here, but he's here. He taught the two of us enough. We'd worked with him enough that we kind of knew exactly what would Steve do in this position, So it made it easier. But yeah, 21 days straight in the studio. We actually took 2 days off. We took 1 weekend off, but other than that, all the rest of the time was consecutive days. I slept in the control room. I initially wrote about 14 songs for the record. I got down to the studio. I live up in Northern California now. I'm up in the East Bay. So I drove down to the studio and I wrote another 4 or 5 songs and picked another cover song while I was right after I got there. I sat down and busted them out. We ended up recording a total of 20 songs in those 21 days. And it was intense. It was pretty intense time.
Wow, so how many tracks are going to be on the final release?
I think the record's got 12 or 13 tracks on it. I know, I should know that. But it's either got 12 or 13. So, like, we've got songs, that'll carry me through for the next 2 years if I need be.
Right on.
And there's definitely plans for, singles of songs that did not make it on the record and all kinds of other good stuff. My label, Fat, they're really good at, giving people like a cool product, Something when you buy it, it feels substantial, They do great artwork and they know how to do their releases. So,
One thing that I've always found interesting about you, CJ, is I know that you were pretty critical of the Ramones' decision to sign with, was it Radioactive Records?
Yeah, Radioactive, yeah.
And I always liked your logic behind it was, you had an offer from another record label, and I can't remember it at this moment, but you felt that they really understood the Ramones and would be able to sell the Ramones.
That's Brett Gerwitz's label. They were after us. They were really after us,
Was that something that was frustrating as, sort of the junior member of that band?
Yeah, totally. It was really weird, all the way around to be in a band with, guys I grew up idolizing, respecting, it was hard for me to voice my opinion sometimes, but that was probably like one of the first times I ever spoke up and really challenged Johnny on any. Johnny was the business guy. He handled everything. But I said to him, I was like, John, how do you not see the conflict of interest in signing a record deal with your manager? That's, it don't make sense at all. And Epitaph was after us really hard. Brett Gerwitz came and flew out and came and saw us in, I think we were in Amsterdam. And he was backstage. And I said to John, I go, this guy grew up loving the Ramones. He's a avowed Ramones fan, and now he's got one of the biggest punk rock labels in the world. He's a smart guy. He's going to do everything he can to give you the commercial success you never got. Like, I don't understand the reasoning. And of course, after the Ramones retired and I learned about all the backdoor stuff, Johnny and Gary Kerfurst, who was their manager and then their label owner also, had worked together for years, and they had, worked out deals for side money, and, Gary would go to, I forget he was, who he was, who gave him his label. He was, but he was a subsidiary of another big label. And the deal was he'd go to the label and get a big giant budget for a record, and we'd make a record for $15,000, and then him and Joey and Johnny would split the money, and that would be it. So, which, never, even after I found that out and understood the logic, it never sat right with me because Johnny basically sold out the end of the Ramones career for a couple $100,000.
Right, right.
And as a fan and as somebody who was a friend of Johnny's and really respected Johnny and loved him to death, I mean, I would have done anything for the guy. It just stuck in my craw, and I couldn't let it go. And but you know, Johnny, in his very straight and to the point manner, said to me, "Hey, when you have enough years in the business as I do, then you can tell me how to run the business."
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and I had to respect that. It's, you know, his game. He wants to play it his way, and that's how it went.
Do you think he was ready to ramp down the Ramones at that point, and that helped sort of make his decision?
Yeah, totally. Without a doubt. Towards the end, everyone was having trouble getting through the shows, especially Joey. Joey had been diagnosed in 94, I think it was. And Johnny was just tired. You know, when you kind of carry the ball for the team on every play, which Johnny did, you know, wears you down over time.
Sure.
And Johnny always had this number in his head. When I have, you know, $2 million or $3 million saved, I'm going to retire. And right. I think the deal with Radioactive got him to that number, and he was like, okay, let's make a couple of records and get out and move on to the next thing. Unfortunately, like so many other guys, he retired and never really had the chance to enjoy his retirement and died.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad, you know, the history of the Ramones, and I've talked about it with BJ here on Rock and or Roll, and there's a lot of great things surrounding the Ramones, CJ. It mainly the work you and Richie are both doing to sort of keep the Ramones music alive. And then also just this whole resurgence where I turn on my TV and I hear Ramones music on TV commercials and you see it in Spider-Man trailers.
Yeah.
Do you think that had Johnny lived, that the estate would have gone in a similar direction?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, no doubt. We would have done if Johnny and Joey had survived, had made it past the first couple of years, there would have been a reunion tour, and guaranteed, if the Ramones had done a reunion tour at that point, it would have really pumped up their legacy big time, and then everything would have been Ramones, you know, music and images and everything else. But you know, the thing about it is the Ramones have kind of achieved that icon level that very few people do. It's like Marilyn Monroe, James Dean, Elvis Presley, you know, people like that whose work, body of work, and even their own image no longer belong to them or their estate. It really belongs to the people. It belongs to, you know, it belongs to history. And the Ramones have achieved that icon status. And to me, that is just the best, you know, despite the fact that they never got support from the record industry or support from, you know, radio or MTV. They just never, ever, ever got the support that so many other bands got that helped to break them. And they just kind of did their own thing all the way to the end and became as big an icon as some of the biggest stars that have ever lived.
Yeah, no, that's beautifully said, CJ. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about that last album that you guys did as the Ramones, Adios Amigos.
Adios, yep.
I'm a big fan, and I got to say this. I've said this before, CJ. The Ramones made good albums, and they made great albums. They never made a bad album, and I would say that this is one of the good ones.
Yeah.
I was really curious how your two solo writing credits ended up on the album. Is that something that, you know, Johnny or Joey asked you to bring to the band, or were you comfortable enough at that point to start submitting your own material?
It's kind of weird to be in that position where you get asked to submit songs. I could, you know, for me to submit a song that I wrote and have it go up against Johnny, you know, something that Joey wrote or something that Dee Dee wrote, it was a really uncomfortable situation. And I even had, you know, I had sat down with Daniel Ray a couple of times and brought him ideas. And once they were worked out, I was like, they just sound like wannabe Ramone songs. And I didn't even submit them. But on that last record, I realized it was my last chance to really get to leave my mark on the Ramones legacy. That was it. You know, it was going to be the last record. And the two songs that I wrote for it, I wish I had taken that track a little bit earlier on when I first got into the band, and just tried to sit down and write some good songs, because that's what I did. And I got a lot to say, and Scattergun, I felt comfortable with them on the records next to Dee Dee's songs and next to Joey's songs. I felt like they kind of earned their own place on the records, and they stood up well in the kind of the hierarchy of that record. And it was just like a moment of clarity that sometimes you don't have when you're a kid until it's too late. You know, it's like, oh my God, I just beat my head against the wall for, you know, 7 years, and all I had to do was just sit down and write a couple of songs in my own style. And, you know, I mean, if you listen to the Bad Chopper record, which, you know, ended up coming out after the Ramones were gone and everything else, those would have been the songs that I had submitted for the last record.
Right.
And that Bad Chopper record is super fiery, and I think would have, you know, a couple of songs on that record would have made the Adios Amigos record a little bit stronger than it ended up being.
Wow. I do got to say is I give Joey and Johnny a lot of credit, and this goes all the way back to when Richie was contributing songs. They were very open to letting other members of the band that weren't
right.
Dee Dee or them submit songs. And a lot of bands, and you're in the music industry, CJ, you know, this is all about publishing and who gets the songwriting credit. So I think it speaks a lot about who Joey and Johnny were to allow that kind of input from somebody who was, you know, a newer member of the band, and I think that's really cool that you were able to do that.
Johnny was a huge music history fan, of course, and a huge Elvis Presley fan. You know, Johnny got to be friendly, of course, with Elvis's family and everything over the years, but Johnny knew early on that part of what killed Elvis's career was that his manager didn't want to pay for songs anymore. So instead of Elvis getting the good songs like Love Me Tender and all those early ones, you know, that they bought the rights from, you know, they just started taking songs from like people who would give them songs for free.
Right.
And Johnny learned that the key to a great album is great songs. You can be the greatest entertainer in the world, but if you're performing crap, it's still crap. You can only polish the turd so much.
Yeah.
So that's why Johnny was big on, I don't care who wrote the song. If it's a great song, it goes on the record. And of course, that's why you see, you know, Dee Dee was on every record all the way up to the end, even after he left the band.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk to you about Dee Dee a little bit. But first, I was curious about The Crusher and how and why it ended up on this album and how you went about approaching redoing a vocal on a song that Dee Dee had recorded on an album that a lot of people kind of see as this strange anomaly.
Yeah. The you know, the thing about Dee Dee's songwriting is his lyrics are always so clever, and the way that he structures his songs and stuff, there's so much genius to it that sometimes you can overlook. It can easily be overlooked. So when they first told me we were doing The Crusher, I was like, I'm trying to think, like, how am I going to do this? You know what I mean? Like, how... I don't even know, you know, like an actor needs motivation for a scene. When you're singing somebody else's song, you either have to find some way or some thing in the song that makes it relate to you personally, or you have to be able to put on a good enough front that you can kind of match up the way that the original writer did it. Well, in this case, there was no way I could do either. It's a song about wrestling, you know what I mean? And there's no way I could ever hope to capture the amount of personality that Dee Dee had in his voice on his own recording of it. So I just had to cut loose. That's all I did. I was just like, all right, I just got to cut loose. That's the only way I'm going to make it happen. You know, that one would be an obvious one, but it was a struggle to sing anything that Dee Dee handed over, because I would get these demo tapes of Dee Dee just playing his acoustic guitar and singing into a little boombox, and they just sounded so unbelievably soulful, and it was really seriously like being allowed into a world that other people do not get to see. And it made it hard for me to, like, you know, to stand up and sing these songs, because what he gave me was just so perfect.
Yeah.
But I never tried to take Dee Dee's place. I never, ever tried to be Dee Dee, but I got brought in by the band and I just did my best to be as good as I could. And that's how I went at it. So I can't sing it like Dee Dee and I can't play it like Dee Dee. There's no way. So the only thing I can do is to do it in my style, but do it as best as I possibly can and put as much energy and love and respect and as much as I can into it. And that's how I went at it. And, you know, thank God it worked out great. And I'm not saying everything I've ever done with the Ramones is stellar or I nailed it or anything like that. I'm just saying I did it my way.
Yeah.
I didn't try to copy Dee Dee. I didn't try to be Dee Dee. Dee Dee, to me, there'll never be another Dee Dee, ever, ever. He is the original. He's the guy who wrote the book on being a punk.
Right.
He's the guy. And there's no way I'm going to do that. So I just did my best to do my best.
No, and you sure did.
Yeah.
guys ended up playing together in The Remains. How did that come about?
Mark was playing. It was Mark, Dee Dee, and Barbara. And Dee Dee just, you know, me and Dee Dee always got along. We always got along. And I always treated Dee Dee with respect. And he appreciated that. And I think what happened was he wanted to bring in a rhythm guitar player, and he asked me in.
Wow.
So I came into the band. It's so funny. Me and Dee Dee, the two bass players from Ramones, both playing guitar. But I loved it. It was awesome. It was really a lot of fun doing it. I had a great time. And with Mark being there, I was totally comfortable. It wasn't getting used to a whole new thing or anything. So it was really good. But I at that point, I had my own band, Los Gusanos, and I had a lot of time and effort and energy into it. Johnny had warned me early on about Dee Dee. He said, you know, Dee Dee changes his mind a lot, and you gotta understand that. He's not an easy guy to deal with and to get along with, you know. It's, you know, and Dee Dee said it himself, you know. Sometimes I'm the good Dee Dee, sometimes I'm the bad Dee Dee. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He knew it about himself. But I loved playing with him. I loved doing The Remains. We really had a good time. The choice of songs was awesome. And I would have loved to have done a bunch more, but Dee Dee was really, he was doing his own thing at that point. And, you know, today he would like it, tomorrow he might not. And I had, you know, Los Gusanos going on, and plus I had already started. I was working on a family, and, you know, I was trying to simplify my life a little bit.
Right.
And that would not have simplified it.
Now, you talked about had things gone differently, there might have been a reunion. And there sort of was a little, mini reunion at the final show the Ramones played where, you know, Dee Dee came back and sang a song with the band. Now, was there ever any talk of getting Tommy involved?
No, but I had suggested that. When the Ramones got asked to do Lollapalooza, I told Johnny I wasn't going to do it. I didn't want to do it. And I had, because I had gotten to a bike wreck back in 92, and I started building, rebuilding my bike. And I said to John, hey, listen, the summer of 96, make sure you don't book nothing because I'm going to do a cross-country trip. So the winter of 95, we were on the retirement tour.
Right.
And John came to me during that tour and he said, CJ, listen, we got offered to do Lollapalooza in the summer. I said, John, I'm not doing it. I give you 4 years notice. I told you I'm doing a motorcycle trip this summer and I'm not doing it. And he was like, well, you know, blah, blah, this and that. And I said to him, I said, hey, John, listen, you want to really have a poetic end to a really awkward career? I was like, get Tommy and Dee Dee in the band. And go out and do a different record in every city and get the original band back together. It'd be such a poetic end to such an awkward career. I was like, the fans will love it. The press will love it. Everyone will love it. I said, I'll be out on the road. I'll stop in and jump up and play a song here and there or something where you can have Mark come up and do a, you know, me and Mark come up and we do a song. So I was like, but get the original band back together. And Johnny said, CJ, you're an old fan. That's what you want to see. Most of these kids never seen Dee Dee and they never saw Tommy and they want to see you and Mark. He was like, take your time and think about it. So that's what I did. I took my time and I thought about it and I realized we had just kind of petered out playing the usual dives that the Ramones had been playing since the early 80s through the States. And that was not a fitting retirement tour for the Ramones. And I realized like Lollapalooza would be a great send off for them. And so I went back to John and I said, all right, I'll tell you what, here's the deal. I'll do the tour. I'm doing it on my bike. I don't want to hear about sound checks, interviews, time constraints, nothing. I do it completely on my own. And he said, okay, but if you miss a show, you lose a week's pay. I was making $700 a week, brother. I was like, oh, wow, that's going to break the bank. So that was our agreement. But that is the one and only time I had ever heard Tommy be mentioned, and that's because I mentioned him. And I really spent a fair amount of time in interviews and stuff getting people to understand post-Ramones that Tommy was the man.
Yep.
That Tommy is the creator of the Ramones. The look, the sound, the method, it's all Tommy Ramone. He told them what instruments they were going to play. He told them what they were going to wear. It was all Tommy. And I just felt like, you know, that should be known. And I actually had the opportunity to tell Tommy that when we did a party at CBGB's and Tommy was there. And he was sitting in the booth with, I think, was Joey there? I think Joey might even been there and Arturo Vega. Mm. And I went over to him and I said, hey, Tommy, I just wanted you to know that some of the fans understand. They know what your contribution is. And he was like, what are you talking about? I said that you're the man. That you're the guy. And he was like, how do you know that? I said, well, I learned it when I was younger by deconstructing the Ramones' career.
Yeah.
If you go backwards in records, you can see where they kind of fall in and out of spells of mediocrity. Everything they do all the way up to and including Road to Ruin is just side for side, song for song, some of the best rock and roll ever recorded. All of a sudden, they go to work with Phil Spector. Tommy's gone. Ed Stasium's gone.
Yeah.
And they put out an album with, you know, moments of greatness on it, but a fair amount of filler. Because the genius of the Ramones was lost in the translation through the Phil Spector process. And from there on out, they just end up going from one producer to another who was trying to make them into something that they weren't and were trying to match them up with the new sound that was happening or whatever. So I explained this to Tommy that way. I said, and after I got into the band, Johnny actually confirmed that to me when I asked him. And he was like, oh, all right. He was like, I think he thought that I was full of shit. I think he thought, you know, that I was just like blowing smoke up his ass. But I told him, I was like, no. I said, no, I figured that out. I said, and I know a lot of other fans have too. So he was really appreciative. And he was such a good, humble guy too. I mean, I shouldn't say, from what I know of Tommy, he was a really humble, humble dude and never tried to make a big deal about himself or, you know, he didn't jump up and down and yell and scream, you know, it's mine, you know?
Yeah.
That's why when I wrote the song on the last record, I wrote the song Tommy's Gone, I always wondered, you know, what was it like to be Tommy and watch all of the work that you did get carried away by somebody else.
Yeah.
To get carried off. And that's what I talk about in the song. You know, how'd you feel about it? Were you like down about it? Or were you like a proud father? Like, yeah, there goes my boys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How did it feel to watch them go? Take away everything that you own. Did it hurt to watch from so far away? While they lived on what you made. Were you happy to see them up on the stage?
But yeah, great dude. I mean, just imagine that. Probably guy responsible for so much in the, you know, in music, not you know, not necessarily the music industry, but in music.
Yeah.
Because if you think of all the bands the Ramones have influenced, and that's all from Tommy.
Yeah. And the amazing thing about that, CJ, is Tommy wasn't even a drummer by choice, but he created such an iconic, influential style.
Yep. He could not find a drummer to play the style that he heard in his head. So he was like, I'm just going to play drums until we find a guy.
That's amazing.
And that's what he did. And, you know, he was like, when they found Mark, he was like, yeah, I can teach Mark how to play the style. And of course, Mark went off and totally made it his own. And, you know, as the years went on, the Ramones played faster. Mark developed his whole own thing. But all Tommy.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Road to Ruin, and I know every year you try and make it out to the birthday bash for Joey. And
yeah.
Last year you did with Joey's brother, Mickey, and Richie. You guys did the entire Road to Ruin album, right?
Yeah, just about. Yep. I think we did them all.
How did that come about?
Mickey just, you know, just got the itch to do that one and got in touch. And, you know, for me to sit down and get re-familiar with Ramones record don't take me all that long, you know. But it's still fun. I still do Ramones songs in my set.
Yeah.
You know, I love the Ramones. I never stopped loving their music. I never stopped loving the band. To this day, it's still makes me happy to play their stuff.
Yeah, it's funny, CJ. I've done two mixes in the last couple of years of live versions of the first album. I took recordings from 74 all the way up to the end of the band.
Right.
And I, you know, made sort of a live mix. And right. I attempted to do that with the second album. And I hit a wall. And thankfully, you and Daniel Ray performed What's Your Game back in 2010, and I was able to use that cut to complete my
live set. I still bust that one out once in a while.
Yeah.
I try to – I even do stuff like Babysitter. You know what I mean? Like, I really try and I owe that to the guys from the Huntingtons. They when they came out and played with me for a couple of years there, they brought that one up. But I really try to do, like, fan favorite stuff, you know? Like, we do Outsider and you know, Here Today, Gone Tomorrow. You know, we really – I try to kind of plumb the depths of the Ramones catalog to find the ones that they didn't do live. And most of the times, they're the kind of the sappier, more bubblegum, you know, prettier sounding ones. And as I've gotten – like, when I was in the band, people would be like, what's your favorite song? I'd be like, Warthog.
Yeah.
You know? And Endless Vacation, Eat That Rat, you mm-hmm. know. And now I find that I really love – the deep cuts, the pretty ones where Joey is just crooning his guts out and Ed Stasium's playing all those pretty chords in the background with all the grace notes and, you know, and Dee Dee's background vocals are, you know, slightly off pitch, but they sound so good matched up with Joey's voice. And, you know, it's like I really have found a whole new thing to love about the band. But that's, their catalog is deep, you know, it's deep.
Yeah. That's awesome. And are there any plans for the Birthday Bash this year, or are you going to be too busy promoting the album?
Oh, I don't even know yet. I think I already committed. Usually what I'll do is last year I had my own show down in like Philadelphia. So I had to go up and do the show with Mickey and Richie and then jump in a car and drive down to Philly and get there in time to do my own show. So it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I try to make it happen. You know, I try to think of the fans in everything I do, and you know, of course, because I am one, it's not hard to know what the right thing to do is. You know, the fans just want to hear the Ramones songs played with you know, with love and respect, and they want to sing along, and that's what I try to do. That's what I try to give them, and thankfully they've accepted my music, and you know, I back my songs up to Ramon's songs up to mine, and the set just flows really nice, and it's a most, I mean, from what I can tell, I think most people come away feeling really good.
Yeah. So you're going to be doing a series of West Coast dates before you go overseas, right?
Yep. Yeah, starting on May 30th all the way to June 9th. And then I head over to Europe with, I'm actually playing bass for Me First on the Gimme Gimmes for a couple of weeks over there. And that tour ends, and that backs 3 days later, my tour kicks off. So I'll be in Europe for 2+ months. And then after that, this ain't announced yet. No one's supposed to know. But when we come back from Europe, we're actually flying into New York and then starting a little East Coast back to the West Coast run.
Oh, sweet. Sweet. Well, hopefully our listeners are able to see you on one of your stops and definitely pick up the new album when it comes out on May 10th.
Yep.
And May 10th. It's going to be available on all platforms, right?
Yep. All platforms. And then you got the first single, Blue Skies, is up on YouTube right now. It's up on Fat Records YouTube channel. And that's what we got right now. The Holy cool. Spell.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'll make sure to include links to all the pertinent ways to keep track of what's going on with you,
Instagram, CJ. Twitter, Facebook. And all my feeds are run by me. I do them. I don't have a press person or anybody like that. It's me sitting on my couch with my wife looking at me aggravated because I'm constantly on social media. So it's all me.
That's awesome. And I want to thank you for this, TJ. But before I let you go, I want to ask you one more Ramones-related question. And I'm not sure if you'll have an answer to this or not. But
okay. How
do you think Joey would feel about the 2019 version of New York City?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think Joey would probably be living up near Woodstock by this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2000 New York City is, nothing. There's nothing left. There's nothing left from our scene there. There's literally nothing left. All the little clubs, all the cool little bars are gone. And I mean, there's, you know, a whole bunch of new stuff there for the new crowd of people that hang out there. But most of the punks and rockers and stuff outside of Bowery Electric is a great place. And Niagara, I don't even know if Niagara's still there, but there's still a couple of cool places around in New York City, but most people go to Brooklyn and it's all getting pushed out into Queens now. So
yeah,
I think Joey would be probably living up in Woodstock by this point and having a pretty kickback life and writing songs and poetry, and he still had a lot of life in him, still had a lot to offer creatively. You know, it's a shame he died as early as he did, but left a lot of good stuff behind. So
yeah, and we thank you for helping to carry on that legacy. And again, CJ, I want to thank you for your time, and we'll definitely hopefully talk again soon.
All right.
Stand up when they tell you stand down, stand up.
You just reminded me of something, CJ, that I wanted to ask you about, and I promise you I'll let you go now. Do you have any memories or any stories from the Guitar Pete's Axe Attack album you played on?
Oh, yeah. Well, Guitar Pete, actually, he's the guy. Him and his band found me. I was like 17 years old playing in clubs before I was even old enough to be in them. And they spotted me playing with some friends of mine in an all-original band. And Pete's the guy who kind of taught me, like, how to handle myself and you know, how to be a real player. Okay. You know what I mean? Because anybody can say, yeah, I play bass and jump up on stage and blow the whole thing because they can't go one song to another or they get scared because there's people in front of them. Pete's the guy that really taught me, you know, how to get around on stage and how to handle myself in general. So that band was really important in my formative years. And I was like a quiet kid, and those dudes, you know, were all older than me by a couple of years. So I just came in and I kept my mouth shut and I watched how everything worked. And I, you know, I just tried to get up on stage and be good, you know. We actually were one of the bigger bands on Long Island. We used to play some big shows. I actually made like some money playing with that band too. Probably more than I made with the Ramones.
That Nightmare album, it's a good album, CJ.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's got that blues metal kind of feel to it, and it was awesome to play that stuff live. I loved it.
be back.